before their hashtags.
A dissection of pop culture past.
With Eric Dallinger.
And Carly Anna Billings.
Each week we hop in our time machine and take a look at the past of pop culture.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Before There Were Hashtags podcast.
Woo-hoo!
With your amazing hosts, Eric Dallinger and Carly Anna Billings.
Hello! Hello, all. Welcome back. Welcome, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, this week, we are so excited to be here. Not that we're not excited every week to be here, but this week, oh, baby, buckle it up.
Oh, my goodness. You know what that just reminded me of?
What?
Saying hello three times. Did you ever watch that, like, Miley Demi video where... Selena Demi video where Selena's like, yo. Demi goes, yo, yo. Yeah, I said it twice. What do you think about that? And then Miley made a parody video of it
Her
friend Mandy, and then they have the Miley and Mandy show.
I fully do remember that happening, which is so silly. It's like the early days of YouTube.
Yeah, and yeah. Disney Channel. Just Disney Channel are fighting just like Hillary and Lindsay did.
Oh my god.
We're already giving them the throwback.
Yeah, you're welcome. This is bonus throwback content that, you know what? Off the tip of the brain. Off the tip of the dome. You're welcome.
Yo. Yo, yo.
Yo, yo.
Yeah,
that's right.
Twice.
I said it twice.
What do you think about that?
Oh my god. Yeah, there was so much about that. That whole situation. And people were like, oh, they're friends, but they're too close to be friends. And like, there's a whole like, oh, we could go down a spiral, an internet spiral on these bad boys.
Oh, it's so crazy. It's so crazy. Wild. You know that they call them the X-Ax?
The X-Ax?
So, yeah, like, it's so hard to say.
X-Lax.
But like X, like the letter X, and then
right.
Ax.
Like the word like, act with an
the
S.
The new act.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to be, it's Miley, Demi, Selena, and Ariana are called the X-Ax. Because they're the former, like, Nickelodeon Disney X.
Right.
They're no longer, so they're X's.
X. They put the X in front of it just to make sure that you know.
Just to make sure you know they are not
affiliated.
Disney stars
they're
anymore.
They're no longer affiliated. Oh my god. That's funny. Oh, how times change.
Crazy. Well, we had to give them some light throwbacks because this topic is not light,
no,
Carly.
No. This episode of Before There Were Hashtags gets down and deep, and I mean, it's an excellent, excellent topic. If you've read the title and you've read the description, you know what we're talking about. And if you have any knowledge of this person or their situation in general, I'm sure you have an inkling of what we're referring to. But if you don't, baby, stick around. And if you do, stick around. We're gonna dive in today.
If you thought the Britney Spears story was tragic,
oh,
the Brittany Murphy story is it tops it.
It's just as equally wild, but also devastating. So,
oh, it's so tragic.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's pretty wild.
I did, yeah. We should probably give a little disclaimer that we are going to be dealing with subjects of eating disorders, drug use,
death and dying,
death,
yeah,
and just a lot of triggering content. So if you do not have the mental stability right now to deal with that, no pressure. We will see you next week.
Absolutely,
we love you.
We
Thank
love
you for tuning in.
Totally. But yeah, if you're a little bit true crime junkies, like we tend to skew, or if you're are ready to tackle an interesting and dynamic and important and tragic topic like this, then happy to have you along.
We should have had Celia on this one because there is even some paranormal stuff going on with this one. Some ghosts could even be interpreted in this.
That's
one.
True. We could have had a Ghosts Are Everywhere crossover episode today, but not today.
That will
someday
come.
Soon.
That will come.
Absolutely.
Someday.
Yeah, we'll have a little crossover episode, but not today. Today it's just us. It's just but speaking of guests, wasn't our guest last week amazing? Holy
yes.
moly.
Oh my gosh, Allie Weather. She
Allie.
Is so knowledgeable.
She knocked it out of the park. What an incredible first guest. We're so lucky to have her. Wow.
You can go off, sis.
Literally, I was like, I'm going to sit here.
You know everything.
You can teach me whatever. I will listen for always. It was incredible. Yeah, it was so much fun.
It was a little bit of, like, my dream, too, just to talk about K-pop for a full hour.
You finally had someone who not only knew as much as you, but more than you to, like, entertain you with your K-pop talk.
Geek out.
Instead
of
me
K-pop.
Just, like, eagerly, like, nodding along, but also having not that much of a clue what you're talking about. You finally had an audience that was suited for.
When it comes to my K-pop love, like, I only scratch the surface. Like,
that's
I'm like,
true.
BTS, Blackpink.
Yeah, you're new to the scene.
And though BTS and Blackpink, yes, incredible. But they're the most mainstream Western K-pop groups
of
out
them all.
There.
Yeah, totally.
We loved it. There's actually been big news in the BTS sphere right now.
Ooh, well, should we gas up our time machine then while we chat news this week?
Well, I kind of want to talk about this quickly because I have something even better to talk about during the time machine.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
this is
a freebie
for this week. Go ahead.
BTS is like label HYBE. Well, they were with Big Hit,
right.
But then Big Hit turned into HYBE,
sure.
And now Big Hit is a sub-label of HYBE.
Okay.
But they've merged with Ithaca Holdings Group, which is Scooter Braun's company.
No, really?
Yeah, so they've merged or they've been bought out. So now like Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande and Demi Lovato are under the HYBE umbrella.
Whoa.
So BTS and Justin Bieber and Demi Lovato, Ariana Grande, Carly Rae Jepsen, they're all under this sort of HYBE K-pop umbrella now. So
we might be getting
some good collabs.
Also, like, old Taylor Swift is thrown in the mix there, too. Like, that's pretty wild.
BTS owns the masters of Taylor Swift.
They do. They do now.
Taylor's going to start feuding with BTS.
No.
Going to be writing Jungkook's name into songs.
She's gonna be so mad. No,
we love Taylor.
We love Taylor so much, and we support her 100%. But also, yeah, that's really fun to think about.
I heard the funniest thing about Taylor that there's two Taylors. This is from La Culturista's podcast.
Yes.
They say there's Taylor and Tayla, and Taylor wrote Folklore, and Tayla wrote Reputation.
They're just two different.
They're two
ones.
Different beings within her.
That's so funny.
All right, so we should set up our time machine,
gas it up. We got five minutes of current day pop culture to talk about while we gas up our time machine before we head on back to the beginning of our story before there were hashtags.
All right. I wonder if we're gonna be thinking about the same thing.
I don't know. We might not be.
I'm excited to talk about this one.
Okay, you can start.
Here we go. Yeah. Gassing it up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah!
Carly, have you seen the Call Me By My Name music video by Lil Nas X yet?
Yes, I absolutely have.
That is the most insane thing I've ever seen. It was insane in the membrane.
However, I did see
in
all the
best
memes.
Way.
In the, I saw all the memes first, like way before, meaning like hours before I watched the video, but it felt like 100 years before. So by the time I went to watch the video, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, but it was... It was incredible. Yeah, obviously.
My favorite thing is what... So I think YouTube thinks I'm conservative, hardcore conservative now. Because I just go on YouTube and I watch conservative reactions of the video just to see them get mad.
Yeah, and so they're like, Eric likes conservative values.
It's like... Eric likes conservative media now.
Oh, no. That's so funny.
But this video, go watch it. If you haven't seen it, just go watch it.
I mean, if you haven't seen it at this point, you need to see it because it's a cultural touchstone. Have you seen the memes? Like,
yeah.
It's out there, you know. It's in the zeitgeist now. You can't avoid it. The Christians are talking about it. The gays are obsessed with it. Everybody in between has probably seen something from it, so...
Everybody has an opinion. There's not a better moment than when he is literally ascending to heaven in the video, and the pole comes and then he just spirals down.
That is iconic, because up till that point I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's cute, I get it, it's fun. And then I was like, when does it get good? Because I knew all about the Satan twerking, all this. So I was ready and waiting for it, and then the pole comes and I went, it's time. And I just,
it's time,
my whole body was descended with him, because that was amazing. Stripper pulled right into hell to take the seat of Satan. Like, come on. That's amazing.
I mean, if there was a way to go to hell, it's on a stripper pole.
Please, sign us up. Like, that sounds incredible.
He did something like 3 weeks of pole training in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, honestly, the tricks were incredible. Like, I'm not going to, looking at the tricks, I was like, that is some good pole work. Good job.
And doesn't he play every role in the music video?
100%, which is also the best part.
So is he also Satan?
In like maybe heavy makeup? I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
That's the one that I didn't think looked like him. I didn't think he looked like him there.
Maybe.
I mean, the serpent at the beginning, I wasn't sure either, but then I, on the close up, I was like, yeah, no, it's him.
Yeah. It could be in really heavy makeup. I hadn't really thought about it too much. I'm sure a lot of people have done some good deep dives on it already.
Yeah.
But
it's a pretty insane music video.
It was great.
Yeah. But also, then the shoes. Have you heard about the shoes?
No, tell us about the shoes.
Okay, so he has a collab
with Nike, right?
That's the thing.
Because Nike got mad.
Nike is mad about it. It's a streetwear company.
That's the part I do know.
That used the Nike shoes.
Right.
Like, as the base for it. And now Nike's sued this streetwear company.
Okay.
For associations with the devil.
Yeah.
The Satan shoes.
Oh, I'm obsessed.
They have a real drop of blood in them.
That's incredible. I want them. I want that. That sounds, like, ridiculous. I love it.
Well, you can't have them, Carly, because you know how many versions were made?
How many?
666.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. That's the best.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it.
I do enjoy watching conservatives talk about it. It is.
Yeah, what's it like? What are they saying?
Just hits them back. Well, the governor was like, how can you watch? The governor of Georgia, he's originally from, was like, how can you watch this? And he like literally wrote back, you're a governor. We have mass shootings.
Yeah.
Why are you focused on this?
Yeah, like, why is this something that you're talking
about? Nowhere near as bad as we have a global pandemic. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, and Georgia especially. Didn't they just pass, like, a law against trans folks? Like, taking away, everything? So.
Well, I didn't hear about the trans folks ones. I heard about them diving into voter suppression even further.
Oh, that's true. Oh my God, Georgia.
Yeah, they've created all these new laws to make it harder to vote in cities, but not in rural areas.
Right?
Because, you know, all the black people live in the city, so they make it harder for the black people to vote because the black people are more likely to vote Democrat.
Yeah, no shit.
Ugh. Why, Georgia? Why?
Because they know that there's activists mobilizing to get black voters out because they know black voter suppression is so strong. Oh my God, it's very upsetting.
Okay, so
anyways,
the time's
black
up,
lives
but
matter.
Just got to finish my thought. If you truly believe in democracy, you believe that everybody should vote and you should be making it easy for people to vote. You should not be suppressing voters. If you truly believe in democracy and if you love America, you love democracy. So F all you conservatives that are literally taking away black people's right to vote. Well, not just black people, but targeted towards black people.
Specifically black folks, and specifically racialized folks, and specifically immigrant folks, and specifically folks that vote other than you, and specifically, truly, if you love America, what you probably think you love democracy, but you probably don't, and you probably love capitalism. So figure that out and don't do that. Thank you.
We stand with the black community and we stand with the trans community on this pod.
No shit.
So,
if
you don't believe in those rights,
then we don't want you here, honestly.
If you don't believe in
that
stuff, then you can turn off.
Yeah. Or maybe stick around and listen and learn, because you're welcome to do that as well.
That's fair. Maybe I'm being too aggressive.
No,
but.
No, because you know what? There's as somebody who's not a black person.
No, neither of us are black.
No,
and we should say that.
We're both white. I'm indigenous. But, like, happy to educate, happy to share my personal knowledge, happy to help other folks learn, but not here to entertain any like tomfoolery, any fuckery. Like, I'm not here for that, but we'll happily explain to you why maybe you need to open your mind. However, if you're here to just, you know, tantalize and trivialize and be an asshole, then you gotta go. Gotta go. You know, we don't want to entertain that. That's for sure.
Well, we certainly gassed up our time machine with some political talk.
I'm gassed up too, but energy. I'm energized. I'm ready. So passionate. We started off on a great foot for today. To be passionate about, you know, just like, ooh, this passionate topic and life, and we're ready. We're good. We're set.
All right, you ready to jump into Miss Brittany Murphy?
Oh yes, let's jump into Miss Brittany Murphy and her wild story.
Yeah, so it's wild. So Miss Brittany Murphy was born November 10th, 1977 in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, oh, we were just talking about Georgia.
There's our tie-in. There's our segue. Georgia. She's born in Atlanta, Georgia.
So she was born to mother Sharon Kathleen Murphy and her father Angelo Bertoli, who they get divorced when she's only 2 years old. And Murphy was raised by her mother in, what is it?
In Edison, New Jersey. She's raised by her mother in
Edison, New Jersey.
And so I found out...
Thank you, Carly.
I found out that allegedly one of the reasons why her parents divorced... excuse me, I might sneeze. Hold on.
Leave it in. We're human. We sneeze. Get over it.
Okay. I read allegedly that one of the reasons, why her parents divorced is because her father was involved in some organized crime and may or may not have spent some time in jail, etc. So just setting a bit of the scene from, you know, the home and family life that Brittany came from. She didn't necessarily grow up in that because she was, like we just said, raised by her mother in Edison, New Jersey. But, you know, origin story stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, she actually starts off as a dancer. She sings, she acts, she learns at a local dance studio. And her dance teachers were quoted as saying, I didn't know if she was going to be a dancer, a singer, or an actress, because she was that talented and she could do all three.
Yeah, she started from a very young age, like age 4 or 5. And that's when a lot of, like, you know, like, I find a lot of these legends, a lot of these icons, like, especially when they're women, like, that's the age that a lot of these very talented folks start at, which is really interesting and neat. But yeah, so it seemed like she was not a prodigy, but she was very good at everything she tried. And she really, like, kind of could go any which way, especially growing up. It was not clear what her path would be, but it was clear that she was something special, and she had some special talents for sure.
Yeah. And in 1997, she makes her Broadway debut.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, in Arthur Miller's A View from the Bridge, in which she starred opposite Allison Janney.
Which is a legend. Oscar Award winner. A legend. Allison Janney, one of my favorite actors of all time.
From the TV show Mom, from the TV show Masters of Sex.
She's so good in that show.
From
Oh my God, she's in everything.
She's so good in I, Tonya. Oh my goodness. I, Tonya.
She's legendary.
She won the Oscar for I, Tonya, right?
Yeah, did she not? I think she did. She must have.
Yeah, she won the Oscar.
Who else could have won? Yeah. I don't know. But if she didn't, that would be shocking to me. Yes, so she did debut on Broadway in 97, but not before, in 1991, when Brittany asked her mom if they could relocate to LA so that she could pursue her acting career. And her mom was always supportive of her daughter, and she just packed their life up and they moved. So Brittany was 13 at the time.
She's quoted as saying, when I asked my mom to move to California, she sold everything and moved out here for me. She always believed in me.
Yeah, so sweet. What a nice quote from a daughter about a mother. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a really close relationship. Yeah. We'll later see this.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They were always very close and very interesting. So at 13, after moving to Hollywood, she landed a role in the sitcom Drexel's Class. And she also had before that, when she lived in New Jersey, she had been auditioning in New York City and landed a few, like, background roles and recurring stuff for like Murphy Brown and Boy Meets World, you know, just all these like hit shows and like little things.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was in California, she also had some recurring roles on Frasier, Blossom, Sister, Sister, you know,
Party of Five,
yeah,
Boy Meets World,
yes, you know, a lot of the big hitters. And then, drumroll please, her probably most iconic role of all time, baby. It's 1995.
Yes.
She's fresh. She's fun. She is prepared because she's been training her whole life for this.
She gets her breakout role as Ty in Clueless. Yes.
Rolling with the homies.
I'm so fancy.
Oh, so good.
You're ready now. Two different songs. One from the movie, one a music video about the movie.
Yeah, literally. Oh my god, so iconic.
And this isn't even just her big break. This is also Alicia Silverstone's.
Yeah, well, Alicia Silverstone had been working for a little bit, but this is her big fucking thing. Like, yeah. Totally. It's such an iconic. Paul Rudd is in it. It's so iconic. It's like a cult classic. Based on a Shakespeare. It's so silly. It's so weird.
Based off of the Iggy Azalea video. Wink, wink.
Oh my god. It's really iconic. It's weird, but it holds up kind of. And as if it's so beautiful and great. But then she follows it up with a movie in 96 called Freeway with Reese Witherspoon and Kiefer Sutherland. You know,
yes.
This is legit.
Yep.
And then in 99, she was in the movie Girl Interrupted with Winona Frickin' Ryder, my Queen of Queens, and Angelina Jolie. So again, just like...
Angelina Jolie wins an Oscar for this role.
For this role, like, these are big frickin' flicks. Like, she is a gal, you know? She is out there.
And I just wanted to mention, in all these movies, she's getting, like, good reviews. Girl Interrupted, she gets great reviews.
Totally.
She's being quite respected as an actress.
Totally. Yeah, at one point, film critic Roger Ebert acclaimed her acting talent and comedic timing. Because she was specifically really good with comedic timing. People were like, she's a great dramatic actor, she's wonderful, but her comedic timing is special. And he gave her a lot of good reviews, and even at one point comparing her to freaking Lucille Ball, like the queen of comedy herself. So
yes,
like, and honestly, like, you can see that in a lot of her early work and even her later work, which we can talk about in a second. But it's her comedic timing and her just like beautiful, like, nuanced comedy. She's in Drop Dead Gorgeous. She's in Eminem's 8 Mile in 2002. And then eventually she settles into rom-coms, which makes sense because she's so funny.
There's some personal life stuff that happens around here. So the documentary that I watched kind of hints at this idea that she was feeling a little bit unsatisfied in her public persona and her work, that she was sort of always the second star that, like, in Clueless, like, it was Silverstone's big break.
Yeah.
It was also her big break, but it was first. At least it was Silverstone.
You can even argue she was the third. Like, it went...
Yeah, Stacey Dash.
Yeah, Stacey Dash before her, too, so...
And then also, like, even Eminem in 8 Mile, that it's, like, it's his movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's, like, a little unsatisfied with this. And the Lifetime documentary that I watched hints at this idea that this is a real catalyst for her to lose a lot of weight and dye her hair blonde and become sort of the quintessential Hollywood bombshell.
Yeah, totally. The things that I watched and read is that Penny Marshall. I was like, that's not right. Penny Marshall, I'm not sure if this is a direct quote, but was kind of quoted or hinted at, and I'm not sure what interview, but she had said that she felt that maybe Brittany Murphy's images with her body image issues, which she seemingly had, even though she personally denied having them, might have become heightened during her time in Clueless, because she was surrounded by these other young actors and actresses who had been in the industry, who knew, like, how to look, quote unquote, and, like, we're beautiful and we're skinny and we're blonde, or we're not blonde, but they were like this, like, 90s version of what is beautiful, which was like very, very skinny. And she was cast as the quote unquote ugly friend who needed a makeover.
Yeah.
You know, so she was.
She's the one that gets the makeover.
Yeah. Even though she was cute from the beginning, and then she was cute when she had the makeover, and then she was cute again at the end. You know what I mean? She was always cute. Like, they wouldn't have cast somebody actually ugly because that's Hollywood for you, which is stupid because everybody's beautiful. If you find, you can find something beautiful about every single person on the planet. But
this is a total tangent.
Yeah.
Have you seen Firefly Lane from on Netflix with Katherine Heigl?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, it's sort of all about how there's like the pretty friend and then the not as pretty right. friend. And I literally turned to my mom. I was like, I love how they cast like a 10 to be the pretty friend and they cast a 9.5 to be the ugly friend.
Yeah. They're like, she's like, so ugly.
That is
ugly.
Hollywood for you.
And you're like, what? Yeah, that's true. It's always, well, it's like the Princess Diaries thing where Anne Hathaway has a frizzy hair and ugly glasses. She gets her hair fixed and she takes her glasses off. She's hot. You're like, she was always the same person. She always looked like that. Yeah, she just had weird hair.
The bone structure was always there.
Like, she was always that size. You know, like all these things that like are like Hollywood hallmarks for what is beautiful or what was beautiful at the time even. Because again, beauty standards change constantly. But yeah, so she, I think, Penny Marshall said that that might have, you know, played into or spurred some of that body, maybe, you know, those body feelings.
So this is the start of like the tabloids. They start to sort of center in on this narrative of her having an eating disorder, her having a cocaine addiction and drug abuse. And that's the reason why she's losing weight. Once again, she denies this fiercely. She says that she's just a healthy person and she's been exercising a lot, that she continues to do ballet, and that's a huge
She uses health. Ballet as her like big reason for it. She's like, I'm healthy, I do ballet, it's just my ballet, I'm just getting toned because of ballet. And like a lot of people critics who have come out against what she said, but being like, girl, why does your face look different then? Like, why is your, you know, face more sunken, more sullen than like in the older day, like in the earlier in movies and stuff. And she would go on and say like, oh, like as you age, your face changes and blah, 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 which is, you know, true. But like it is a stark difference. And so people are questioning it. Absolutely.
Now, Mark Malkin of E! News sort of explains this in the documentary as sort of, this is sort of a misogynistic claim that gets put on pretty much every Hollywood girl when they start to lose weight. And I think it's fair for us to say that we don't know, we weren't there, so we're not trying to tell you either way if she did have a drug problem or she may have just been a healthy girl, like doing it in a healthy way.
Yeah, totally. We weren't there, we have no clue. But this is what people were saying. What the culture was like at the time. Absolutely.
That this is definitely something that has plagued almost every Hollywood girl. We saw it with Nicole Richie later and Hilary Duff.
Yeah.
The minute they lost weight, everybody was like, do you have an eating disorder? Are you being healthy?
Are you on drugs?
So,
well, like, there's so many, there's any, I would say, honestly, not just women, but especially women. Women are always critiqued for their bodies incredibly more than men, especially in Hollywood. However, men too. Like, when Jonah Hill lost a ton of weight, everyone was like, oh my gosh, skinny Jonah. Look at him, he's so weird looking. And I'm like, this man is just doing it, living his life. Like, leave him alone. Justice for Jonah Hill. Yeah, like, I love Jonah Hill.
People were so rude to Jonah Hill when
they're
he lost
so
weight.
Mean.
They're like, we liked Fat Jonah better.
Yeah, Fat Jonah was funny. Like, skinny Jonah's he's not being, funny. I'm like, what are
as
you
long
talking?
As he's doing it healthy, as long as he's being a healthy person, why do you care?
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? Even if a person is not being a healthy person, that's their prerogative. Who are you to, like, what are you, the health police? Go away, you know? Like, it's not your business if someone isn't harming you. I mean, if they're your friend, your family, you want to, you know, what's best for them. Yeah, absolutely. Advocate for those folks and you know, you can help. But, like, when it's a public figure, it's frustrating to watch other people comment on it because you're like, you don't know what their life is. You don't know. Like, I think people's entitlement to celebrities is very interesting because we feel as though they're our friends. We know all about them. We know all these things. We see them all the time. But it's very one-sided. They have no clue about us. They're like, there's not a real relationship there. And so people feel entitled to comment on these folks. And it's pretty messed up. Especially when it ends up in something so damaging, especially to a lot of young actors and actresses' careers. And just like, what the heck is that about? You know, it just puts a lot of extra stress, I think, on folks. And it doesn't have to be that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But anyways, she settles into back into her career. She settles into rom-coms comfortably.
Yeah,
with,
she does. Just married.
With Ashton Kutcher.
With Ashton Kutcher. And they date for a year.
Yeah, it's cute. They're cute. And then she does Little Black Book.
Doesn't work out.
Doesn't work, obviously. Yeah.
It doesn't work out.
Doesn't work out. She does Little Black Book. She does Uptown Girls.
Uptown Girls.
Yeah.
I love Uptown Girls.
Do you really?
It's probably my favorite in her.
No, really?
It's my favorite in her filmography.
That's amazing.
Little Dakota Fanning's in it.
That's true. Little Dakota. Yeah.
Before Twilight, Dakota Fanning was in.
She's incredible in Twilight. Dakota Fanning's so good in Twilight. Shout out to Dakota Fanning.
But yeah, this movie's good. I really like it.
Yeah.
Just nothing more to say. I'm not a great film critic, but I like it. Go watch it if you can find it.
It's a thumbs up from Eric.
Eric Dallinger approval.
Eric Dallinger approved. Go watch it. And she also does Sin City, which is also another mm-hmm. Big one, called classic kind of deal.
Big one.
Yeah.
But rumors at this time start to say that she's bad to work with.
What is this, like, they're difficult to work with thing? Like, it makes me so, like, frustrated. Like, I know a lot of, like, young actors growing up, and even now, like, emerging actors in their careers, like, it's a fear to be known as the one who's hard to work with. Like, you do everything in your power to not get that moniker or have, like, people think of you in that way. So, like, for her to be considered that is, like, oh, like, so, like, upsetting, you know, whether or not it's warranted or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, her body double, though, Meredith Astro, claims that she was one of the hardest working people in Hollywood.
She probably
her
was.
Really, yeah, her career really takes a nosedive after there's this blind item that's posted by the New York Times about called DoorDash Junkie, in which a DoorDash model is known to be promiscuous at a party and doing drugs and being really sloppy. And at the time, Brittany Murphy was the face of DoorDash Jeans.
Yeah, she was a spokeswoman for that. Totally.
A lot of people believe that this blind item was written about Brittany Murphy.
Well, because they're like, DoorDash Jeans, what model do I know from that? Who else do I allegedly mm-hmm. think or know has a drug problem and is associated with that brand? Oh, Brittany Murphy. So.
Yeah. The New York... did I say New York Times or New York Post? It's the New York Post.
Okay,
just
the Post.
To make that clear.
Totally.
The New York Post retracts this article after she protests and says it's not her.
Yeah.
However, this is a little bit too late. She is let go from her agency, and that's speculation. They go their separate ways, but it's believed that she was let go.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. It's not good timing, even if she wasn't. Because then people think that she was, you know?
And through this whole time, she also has two broken engagements.
Yes, she totally does. So, yeah, she dated Ashton Kutcher. She dated Eminem. Then she was engaged to talent manager Jeff. I don't know how to say his last name. Do you know how to say his last name?
I specifically was avoiding saying their names because I couldn't pronounce
them.
You're
like, Carly, we'll say it. Okay, I'll say it. I'll say it.
The right people. They're white names. We're just not very good at it.
Jeff Quatinent. And then she was engaged to Joe Macaluso, who was a PA on Little Black Book, so the movie she had done.
But then she meets a producer and a screenwriter.
A British screenwriter.
Simon Monjack.
Yeah.
A British screenwriter.
British screenwriter. Yeah, and then she and they get married in 2007, less than a year after her broken engagement, her second broken engagement. So they move fast.
He's a bit of a shady character.
He is a weird guy. He's a weird guy. Everything I've ever seen about him makes me go, he's a weird guy.
He is not the quintessential Hollywood type in terms of looks. Not that that's, like, a must-have by any means.
No, but she's a stunning famous actress. Like, you know?
Yeah, she's a stunning famous actress. He has $300,000 in settlement debt.
Yeah.
From court cases, from lawsuits. And he needs a visa in order to stay in the country.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit shady.
A bit of a messy-seeming character.
Yeah.
Yeah. A bit disheveled.
You look a little side-eyed at him.
Yeah, like a little like, huh? It's a little bit like someone dropped, like, this is gonna be mean, but it's a little bit like someone dropped off their lost uncle and then he just stayed there. I'm like, how'd you get here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, not to say that, like, beauty isn't in the eye of the beholder and whatever, but, like, an interestingly weird match, seemingly, from the outside.
Yeah, he starts also to manage her career. And yes. He's overly controlling. Like, he takes control of her whole image. Like, he decides her, like, what clothes she wears, what her hair is going to look like. He takes full control over her whole career and image. Also, they move in. Okay, this is where things get freaky deep.
Yeah, yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, so they move into a house.
In the Hollywood Hills.
This house was in the Hollywood Hills. Yeah. It was built by Madonna.
Yeah.
And then sold to Miss Britney Spears.
Yes, Miss Britney Spears herself.
And then Britney Spears sells it to Britney Murphy.
Yeah.
Now, here's where it gets weird. This is some freaky deaky shit. Mm-hmm. This is on the podcast is called We Need to Talk About Britney.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more about Britney Spears than it is about Britney Murphy.
Yeah.
But Britney Spears has, this is all comes from a makeup artist of hers.
Yeah.
She has a Reiki healer come in and do some work on her. And after this Reiki healer comes in, she feels that there's a presence in this house, that somehow the Reiki healer has unleashed two demons in the house and that they want to push her down the stairs.
That's too wild for me.
I would move
immediately.
Yeah, so that's what she does. She moves.
Yes, she does.
She moves immediately. She sells everything in the house.
Yeah, it's as
along
is.
With the house.
Yeah, like contents
it's
and all.
As is.
She's
all,
like,
the furniture
bye-bye.
Comes with it. Britney Murphy moves in.
Yeah.
This is like around 2007. Two years later, Britney Murphy dies.
Yeah.
5 months after Britney Murphy dies, her husband dies.
Yeah, in that
in
house.
The very house that Britney Spears claimed there's demons in. And what's also freaky is that her husband, Monjack, put up copious amounts of security cameras because he always felt that he was being watched while living in the house.
So freaky.
And Britney Murphy was never comfortable in the house. She always wanted to get out and go stay at the Beverly Hills Hotel. She would repeatedly ask her husband to, can we just spend the night at the Beverly Hills Hotel? Because she didn't feel comfortable in the house. So there's some presence in this house. That's
there's
why this
something,
is a,
there's
a crossover with
going
ghosts
on
are
weird.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Ghosts are everywhere. That's right, baby. Ghosts are everywhere, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and wherever you listen to your podcast. There's something weird about this house that, like, that's what people are saying. It looks like a regular, ordinary, white, fancy mansion. And by white, I mean built by white people and also the color white. And just nestled into the Hollywood Hills. It's pretty weird. For sure. But like you mentioned, this is a house where Britney Murphy is found and then later is pronounced dead.
Also, something that was also interesting that was pointed out was that the only place she claimed to feel comfortable in the house was the bathroom, and that's where she later was found dead.
Absolutely. So should we jump into that?
Well, I just want to... I know, we've sort of jumped the gun
a little bit. Yeah.
But she does do a Lifetime movie called Tribute, which is shot in New Orleans. And then she's also accused of doctor shopping at this time, so that's when you go to a bunch of different doctors and give fake names and they prescribe you prescription drugs.
Yeah, usually
they don't
opiates.
Know how much you're on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, oh, this is cool. She auditions for the movie Black Swan and was doing copious amounts of ballet training beforehand in order to prepare for this audition. Ultimately, she doesn't get it.
Right.
It goes to Natalie Portman, and this actually is a really sort of devastating moment for her because she was really hoping that would be her big, like, comeback.
Because she's
film.
Like, I'm doing ballet. Ballet is my thing. Maybe they'll let me have it if I'm doing ballet. Yeah.
Because her career is not doing well at this time.
No.
It's important to say
it's
that,
taking
too.
A dive.
She's not filming movies.
Yeah.
She's taking very low budget indie films. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Oh, that's amazing if that's the work. But you're Brittany Murphy, and a couple of years ago you were doing huge like blockbusters alongside like Oscar winning people, you know?
So she goes to Puerto Rico to film the movie Caller, but she leaves the movie after just a few days because she claims it was like unsanitary working conditions. However, the movie claims they let her go due to difficulties on set.
Yeah, back to she's hard to work with shtick.
Yeah, so her mother and her husband are with her, and they both contract a virus while they're there.
Yes. That's true.
This might come back.
Right.
And then, so around Christmas time of the year 2009, she has an interview. She goes to a party and she gets interviewed. Mm-hmm. It's like the famous last words of Brittany Murphy are that she wanted to start a family.
Yeah.
Is that her, what she wanted to do in 2010 was to start a family.
Like she's ready. It's her next step in her life. And she's ready to do that. But unfortunately, she doesn't get to do that because on 8 a.m., December 20th, 2009, the Los Angeles Fire Department responded to a 911 call made by none other than...
her mother.
Sharon Murphy, her mother.
Yeah, her mother. Because they live together.
Sharon
also lives in this house.
Sharon lived with Simon, her husband, and Brittany for 3.5 years in this mansion in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
Which is important to mention. That's absolutely true.
Oh, and I wanted to bring it back. So her mother and husband get this virus. And then after she gets back, she starts to feel sick as well. And it's never confirmed whether it was the same virus. Mm-hmm. But her husband doesn't want her to go to the doctor for some reason, probably because he's put her on like some opioids or some prescription drugs, and he doesn't want that to be discovered.
Yeah, I think he famously says something like he didn't want her to seem like needy or didn't want her to seem like she's hard to work with or needy, which like it's a doctor. If you go to you're sick, you go to the doctor, you know, especially if you're, you know, a rich Hollywood celebrity.
And they finally book an appointment for her to go to the doctor, but she never makes it because she dies before the doctor's appointment.
Yeah, so like you said earlier, what happened is she collapsed in the bathroom and they couldn't resuscitate her on scene. They brought her to Cedars Sinai Medical Center. And at 32 years of age, she dies of cardiac arrest at 10:04 a.m. on December 20th, 2009. Mm-hmm. So the doctors say that her death, quote unquote, appears natural. And they did an autopsy the day after she died. And at the time of the completed autopsy, the death certificate says the cause of death is just deferred. So they, you know, hadn't decided yet.
There's three possible reasons. So there's pneumonia. She has iron deficiency. And there's also drugs in her system.
Right. But they only announced that later on February 4th, 2010. So like a couple months after.
And the drugs being prescription drugs.
Prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs, like things that are readily available and probably are in, you know, a lot of our systems because they're allowed. But she's buried 4 days after she dies on December 24th, Christmas Eve 2009 at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in the Hollywood Hills. At the time of her burial, they haven't released or know really her real cause of death. But like you said, they announce it in February 4th, 2010, the LA County coroner names it, or the main cause is pneumonia, like you said, and that the secondary reasons for death, causes of death are anemia and drugs, but like the prescription or over the counter kind. And also that those drugs are probably treating her for a cold or respiratory infection, which is interesting.
Yeah, and in an interview with Matt Lauer, her husband says, Hollywood has blood on their hands. Hollywood is a village, and the village turned against her.
That's so dramatic.
Yeah, and 3 months after her death, her husband gives a tour of the house she dies in, including the place that she
Yes.
Passed away in the bathroom, and this is seen as being done in really poor
taste. He does it. It's for Radar magazine. He lets them bring a camera crew in and literally take a tour of what folks called the death house. And they like, he points out, he's like, this is where she fell and all this stuff. Like, these are her clothes. Oh, I wish I could have seen her in this Gucci jacket. Like, it is so creepy. It is creepy with a capital C. Like, it's not right. It's weird. Like, people grieve in their own ways. We all know this. It's all like, it's not cookie cutter easy steps for grief for anybody. But this is weird.
Yeah, during this time, too, he is living with her mother. They're living in the same
They're
house.
Sleeping in the same bed, Eric, allegedly.
Why? I didn't... what?
They shared a bed, apparently. Yes.
That's odd.
Yes. It is weird. Things are weird. I'm just saying it's weird.
I don't even know where to begin, because there's just a lot of post-death stuff that happens in the story.
Well, what we could do is maybe start with May 23rd, 2010, which is just a few short months after Britney's death in December. So it goes December, January, February, March, April, May. But 5 months later, on May 23rd, Simon Monjak is found dead in the home. And later, his cause of death is ruled as pneumonia and anemia. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Sound familiar? Found the exact same way, died with the exact same cause of death, about 5 months later.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Pretty nuts.
So, her mother settles out of court with the construction company that built the house.
Yes.
But later, the health department claims that she didn't let them in the house to check it out, which leads people to believe that there's toxic mold in the house.
Yeah.
And also, she later sues her own lawyers, for misrepresenting her because she has to sign
an NDA.
Like a non-disclosure agreement. An NDA.
You got it.
Do not resuscitate. I got there. I swear I'm not stupid.
Acronyms are hard. You got it.
Yeah. NDA.
We all knew what you meant, though. We all knew what you meant.
Yeah. But she does... At first, she claims that the mold report is absurd, but then later goes on to say that... She does believe that it is toxic mold that killed her daughter and son-in-law.
Yeah, because only after Simon dies does the, like, not the coroner's office necessarily, but I think maybe the coroner's office, they consider that the cause of the pneumonia and the anemia is a toxic mold in the house. I can't remember who came out and said it, but they were like, it maybe is toxic mold. And she went, no. And then years later, she went, it's probably toxic mold. So... She does flip-flop a little.
Yeah.
The
house is built on a hill, so there's probably a lot of running water that came down, and there was water damage in the house, unbeknownst to them, that probably grew toxic mold in the house.
Yeah, it's very possible because, you know, toxic, like, black mold is so awful for you, and it manifests in the body in a lot of ways that are symptoms for other things you don't necessarily notice, like rashes, trouble breathing. You don't necessarily... equate it to the place where you live because you spend so much time there. You're probably just like, oh, I'm allergic to a tree that's outside. Oh, I'm allergic to, you know, this thing I keep eating. But yeah, it's absolutely very possible that something like that could be, you know, the reason for death.
But it's interesting because she never gets sick. She's still alive.
Yeah, why is it 2 for 3? What's the deal with that? Riddle me this.
Yeah.
Riddle me this, folks. And you'd assume that her mother, you know, is older than her. That an older person's immune system, etc., is more compromised. Well, we all know this. It is more compromised than a younger, 32-year-old. So, anyways.
Now, there's also her father comes back into the picture. So, her father has to go to court to legally get his name put on the death certificate.
Because he wasn't put on because he's been so estranged for so long.
Yeah. And after he petitions the court to get a paternity test, which links him to be the father,
right.
He asks the court to give him a sample of their of her hair, mm-hmm. and within it, it claims that there's 10 toxic chemicals found in her hair, mm-hmm. and materials that are associated with rat poison.
Yeah, like essentially, heavy metals are found in her hair that shouldn't.
Yes, heavy metals. Thank you. That's exactly what.
Yeah, totally. You're like, well, how does that get in there? Why is that there? It probably shouldn't be there. Yeah.
The coroner's office kind of rules that this is done by a private laboratory, and the coroner's office kind of explains this by saying, no, a lot of those heavy metals are associated with hair dye, especially blonde hair dye, and Brittany Murphy
was brunette
until she lost, until that sort of
her transformation
change in her image, and she becomes a blonde. So that's kind of the end of the factual stuff. There is this really weird conspiracy theory in which, a whistleblower at the Mexican border, she does something. She finds people coming through the border with some believed terrorist attack and whistleblows on it. And this was not seen favorably by the U.S. government for some reason. And she claims to be really good friends with Brittany Murphy. And she believes that this was all a conspiracy to kill her friends and people close to her to have her stop talking about these issues. And that Brittany Murphy and Simon Monjak were simply victims of this conspiracy. And this is where I learned about how he had 50 cameras because he always felt that people were watching him.
Yeah. That's so weird. Yeah, I didn't remember the logistics, but the specifics of that, but I did remember hearing that it could have been a government conspiracy or a cover up. Which is super weird.
Most people don't believe this to be true.
I also would agree that that is a bit of a far-fetched
theory. There's really nothing connecting these two women together.
Yeah.
She doesn't, this whistleblower doesn't even give her name in the investigative discovery documentary on Brittany Murphy.
The ID mystery one?
She's called Sarah in it, but it's a fake name.
Sure.
There's really not a lot of
convincing
evidence for this to be true, besides maybe that she wrote one letter to Brittany Murphy in her life, but Brittany Murphy didn't really respond.
Yeah, it is also worth mentioning that I'm pretty sure that I didn't watch the Brittany Murphy ID mystery series from just this past year, May 2020, but I'm pretty sure a lot of it was, he was either funded it or he was part of it, was her estranged father was the grease behind it. He was the guy making it happen. Yeah, is what I heard. He was involved in heavily trying to get this investigative this investigation reopened and this series come to light. Because he also, said, he claimed because of those toxic heavy metals found in her hair, he claimed deliberate poisoning of Brittany Murphy to be her cause of death. Some people allegedly think that the mother did the poisoning, because she had easy access.
Yes.
And then, once...
And the fact that she's still alive.
The fact that she's still alive.
It really was toxic mold.
Yeah. Some people also believe, because Simon Monjak was so weird, that it was the mother and Simon... And then eventually the mother got Simon too. There's a whole bunch of that kind of did they, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very all alleged, but all very weird.
And then she, in 2010, releases a direct-to-video movie called Abandoned. And this is after her death. And then in 2014, her final film role in the movie Something's Wicked is released. Mm.
Which that's a long time to have a movie in, post-production.
Yeah, in post-production.
That's a long time.
That was such...
You just point that out.
That is a long time.
What is that about, Yeah, that is interesting.
But the Brittany Murphy story is just, to me, so interesting. The fact that it is still a mystery to us. We don't really have a final reason.
Yeah.
That there's so much out there. It's really tragic.
Yeah, people aren't satisfied with what they've been given as an answer for her. For her death.
Yeah.
You know, her loss.
It's a really sad story.
Totally sad.
She has so many... I'm looking at her filmography right now. It's just so much work.
So much work. Like, I think that too speaks to, like, her work ethic personally. Like, the sheer amount of work that she did in the short amount of time that she did it is quite a lot, you know?
She's a voice actor in Happy Feet.
Yeah.
The Ramen Girl.
There was a show she did, so like, many. For all the years it was. She was voice acting in it for, like, the whole time it was on. Like, there's a whole bunch of work that she did that people don't. Yeah. Also, not to mention Happy Feet. She was a singer. And she,
she was a quote singer. Unquote,
wanted to learn how to work behind the mic in a studio and didn't want to have credit for a lot of the vocals she did on a lot of tracks and stuff. And yeah, in Happy Feet, she was like, oh, I can sing. And they were like, what? And she's like, let me sing. And so she sang Somebody to Love and Boogie Wonderland. And she sings like a really hauntingly beautiful bit in, what's it called? Little Black Book. And like, she's actually like a great talent. A lot of people, I've heard some people comparing her as like a modern day Marilyn Monroe. Like, she was this versatile talent who was beautiful and successful, but like for some reason couldn't, like, maybe she's not like icon status of Marilyn Monroe because she's like her Marilyn Monroe's image is like a truly another whole thing. They kind of had a same similar trajectory where they were like, we're actors who want to act and have a good time and show all our talent. People really just like to look at us or think, like, they don't think a lot of us. They think we're hard to work with. There's a lot of parallels between the two of them, which is really tragic because a lot of them are the sad thing. But a lot of them are the talent things too. And so I got a lot of my information today from Stephanie Harlow on YouTube, which is a great channel. She did a great special on this. The Wikipedia Brittany Murphy page and a preview of the Brittany Murphy ID mystery series as well.
It's
Brittany Murphy, man.
Woo! Brittany Murphy. All right, friends, I think we've made it back to our timeland.
Oh, thank goodness.
Timeland. What is that word?
Our timeland.
All right,
smells fresh timeland down here.
So Carly, do you have any pop hits for us as we close out the podcast?
My pop picks of the week. Let's see here. I just finished. Oh, this is another dark topic. I just finished the Allen versus Farrow docuseries, but Woody Allen and Mia Farrow, and like,
oh, cool.
How evil of a person Woody Allen is. Which, if you don't know, now you know. Go watch that documentary. It's truly upsetting, but it's very well done, and it does a really good job of showing. Not a bias, but just like the clear facts that Woody Allen is, you know, evil and like bad. And it's shocking how he hasn't yet been fully canceled by Hollywood or folk. But for some reason, he's like still weirdly beloved. But I'm grateful to announce that I have only ever seen one Woody Allen movie, and it was when I was a child, and it was Ants. I don't intend to ever watch any more of his filmography. And I haven't for a very long time. I've been actively avoiding it. So there's that. And I think you should too. But if you do want to watch something with some Woody Allen content, Woody Allen. So just Allen v. Farrow is excellent. It's great. Good series.
Awesome.
Yeah. Eric, do you have any pop picks of the week, my friend?
My pop picks. Surprise, surprise. BTS released a new song called Film Out, and I'm obsessed with it.
I'm so glad for you. That's awesome.
It's a Japanese song, because, you know, they every so often release singles in Japanese rather than Korean.
Totally.
To support the Japanese fans.
And the Japanese market.
Just know that if you are endorsing BTS, you are also endorsing Justin Bieber. Ariana Grande and Demi Lovato.
That
because
is
they are
awesome.
All under the Hybe umbrella company.
That's so
now
true.
With Ithaca Holdings.
Every time I listen to No Tears Left to Cry, I will know that I too am supporting BTS.
You'll think of BTS.
I will go.
And
BTS.
Every single time you listen to Demi Lovato, you're supporting
That's right.
You're supporting BTS.
Every time I listen to Get Back, I will know that I am supporting BTS.
They've made millions of dollars because they all hold shares in the company.
That's marvelous. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Before There Were Hashtag Pod. This was a really great episode. This is one of those episodes that we have conceived of since the start of the pod, so we're so proud of it. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.